Chapter 123. German serves USA good turn, friend ships in Polynesia, the ship out of the way. We were quite anxious to know what was going to be done with us. On this head, Captain Bob could tell us nothing, no further, at least, than that he still considered himself responsible for our safekeeping. However, he never put us to bed anymore, and we had everything our own way. The day after the Julia left, the old man came up to us in great tribulation, saying that the bucket of bread was no longer forthcoming, and that Wilson had refused to send anything in its place. One and all, we took this for a hint to disperse quietly and go about our business. Nevertheless, we were not to be shaken off so easily, and taking a malicious pleasure in annoying our old enemy, we resolved, for the present, to stay where we were. For the part he had been acting, we learned that the consul was the laughing stock of all the foreigners ashore, who frequently twitted him upon his hopeful proteges of the Calabooza Baratini. As we were wholly without resources, so long as we remained on the island, no better place than Captain Bob's could be selected for an abiding place. Besides, we heartily loved the old gentleman, and could not think of leaving him, so, telling him to give no thought as to wherewithal we should be clothed and fed, we resolved, by extending and systematizing our foraging operations, to provide for ourselves. We were greatly assisted by a parting legacy of Germans. To him we were indebted for having all our chests sent ashore, and everything left there. They were placed in the custody of a petty chief living nearby, who was instructed by the consul not to allow them to be taken away, but we might call and make our toilets whenever we pleased. We went to see Mahoney, the old chief, Captain Bob going along, and stoutly insisting upon having the chattels delivered up. At last this was done, and in solemn procession the chests were borne by the natives to the Calabooza. Here, we disposed them about quite tastefully, and made such a figure that, in the eyes of old Bob and his friends, the Calabooza Baratini was by far the most sumptuously furnished saloon in Tahiti. Indeed, so long as it remained thus furnished, the native courts of the district were held there, the judge, Mahoney, and his associates, sitting upon one of the chests, and the culprits and spectators thrown at full length upon the ground, both inside of the building, and under the shade of the trees without, while, leaning over the stocks, as from a gallery, the worshipful crew of the Julia looked on, and canvassed the proceedings. I should have mentioned before that, previous to the vessel's departure, the men had bartered away all the clothing they could possibly spare, but now, it was resolved to be more provident. The contents of the chests were of the most miscellaneous description. Sewing utensils, marling spikes, strips of calico, bits of rope, jack knives, nearly everything, in short, that a seaman could think of. But of wearing apparel, there was little but old frocks, remnants of jackets, and legs of trousers, with now and then the foot of a stocking. These, however, were far from being valueless, for, among the poor Tahitians, everything European is highly esteemed. They come from Baratini, Fenouilperie, Britain, land of wonders, and that is enough. The chests themselves were deemed exceedingly precious, especially those with unfractured looks, which would absolutely click and enable the owner to walk off with the key. Scars, however, and bruises were considered great blemishes. One old fellow, smitten with the doctor's large mahogany chest, a well-filled one, by the by, and finding infinite satisfaction in merely sitting thereon, was detected in the act of applying a healing ointment to a shocking scratch which impaired the beauty of the lid. There is no telling the love of a Tahitian for a sailor's trunk. So ornamental is it held as an article of furniture in the hut, that the women are incessantly tormenting their husbands to bestir themselves, and make them a present of one. When obtained, no pier table just placed in a drawing room is regarded with half the delight. For these reasons, then, our coming into possession of our estate at this time was an important event. The islanders are much like the rest of the world, and the news of our good fortune brought us troops of Aos, or friends, eager to form an alliance after the national custom, and do our slightest bidding. The really curious way in which all the Polynesians are in the habit of making bosom friends at the shortest possible notice is deserving of remark. Although, among a people like the Tahitians, vitiated as they are by sophisticating influences, this custom has in most cases degenerated into a mere mercenary relation, it nevertheless had its origin in a fine, and in some instances, heroic sentiment, formerly entertained by their fathers. In the annals of the island, are examples of extravagant friendships, unsurpassed by the story of Damon and Pythias. In truth, much more wonderful, for, notwithstanding the devotion even of life in some cases to which they led, they were frequently entertained at first sight for some stranger from another island. Filled with love and admiration for the first whites who came among them, the Polynesians could not testify the warmth of their emotions more strongly than by instantaneously making their abrupt proffer of friendship. Hence, in old voyages we read of chiefs coming off from the shore in their canoes, and going through with strange antics, expressive of the desire. In the same way, their inferiors accosted the seamen, and thus the practice has continued in some islands down to the present day. There is a small place, not many days' sail from Tahiti, and seldom visited by shipping, where the vessel touched to which I then happened to belong. Of course, among the simple-hearted natives, we had a friend all round. Mine was Pokey, a handsome youth, who never could do enough for me. Every morning at sunrise, his canoe came alongside loaded with fruits of all kinds. Upon being emptied, it was secured by a line to the bowsprit, under which it lay all day long, ready at any time, to carry its owner ashore on an errand. Seeing him so indefatigable, I told Pokey one day that I was a virtuoso in shells and curiosities of all kinds. That was enough. Away he paddled for the head of the bay, and I never saw him again for 24 hours. The next morning, his canoe came gliding slowly along the shore with the full-leaved bough of a tree for a sail. For the purpose of keeping the things dry, he had also built a sort of platform just behind the prow, railed in with green wicker work, and here was a heap of yellow bananas and coral shells, young cocoa nuts and antlers of red coral, two or three pieces of carved wood, a little pocket idol, black as jet, and rolls of printed tappa. We were given a holiday, and upon going ashore, Pokey, of course, was my companion and guide. For this, no mortal could be better qualified. His native country was not large, and he knew every inch of it. Gallanting me about, everyone was stopped, and ceremoniously introduced to Poezeo Carherinuir, his particular white friend. He showed me all the lions, but more than all, he took me to see a charming lioness, a young damsel, the daughter of a chief, the reputation of whose charms had spread to the neighboring islands, and even brought suitors therefrom. Among these was Tuboy, the heir of Tamatori, king of Eiodor, one of the Society Isles. The girl was certainly fair to look upon. Many heavens were in her sunny eyes, and the outline of that arm of hers, peeping forth from a capricious tapa robe, was the very curve of beauty. Though there was no end to Pokey's attentions, not a syllable did he ever breathe of reward. But sometimes he looked very knowing. At last the day came for sailing, and with it, also, his canoe, loaded down to the gunwale with a sea stock of fruits. Giving him all I could spare from my chest, I went on deck, to take my place at the windlass, for the anchor was weighing. Pokey followed, and heaved with me at the same handspike. The anchor was soon up, and away we went out of the bay with more than 20 shallops towing astern. At last they left us, but long as I could see him at all, there was Pokey, standing alone and motionless in the bow of his canoe. Part 2. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.